This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Team Toss proudly presents to you, it's Tag Team Podcast Champions of the World, Jason Valdez and myself, the J-E-S-S-E to the T. We're back, baby, and I've got tons of energy, as you can tell. I just got out of the gym. I just pumped that top chest up.
Yes.
I'm floating, baby. You could put me in the middle of the ocean, and my chest's gonna carry me. That's how pumped up I am right now. That's
Scott
how it goes.
Steiner levels. It's just,
dude, I'm telling you. So
veins on top of veins.
Just looking. I'm trying to get into that summer bod mode. You know what I mean? Like, let's do this summer dad bod. Summer dad bod mode. Let's be real now.
Oh yes.
But today's show, we took last week off, and for good reason. Really, we were leading up to the draft.
You're going to do the thing, Jess. You're going to explain why we took a week off.
Exactly, right? I'm just and so we do the thing. We take some time off. Well, here we are. The 2024 NFL draft is in the books. All 257, I believe, players have been drafted. And we will discuss the top 10 because I'm not discussing 257 guys. We will discuss the top 10. Tell you our quick thoughts on the top 10. We will go into Dallas Cowboys draft 2024 and, of course, Buffalo Bills draft 2024 for all you hashtag Bills Mafia folks out there. And then from then on, we got some wrestling stuff. We'll throw that in, and then we will hit pick'ems for this upcoming UFC 301 that is not near what 300 was, but still has some banger fights. Folks, but without further ado, let me introduce to you the one half of the Tag Team Podcast Champions of the World, Mr. Jason Valdez.
The undisputed champions of the world. Jesse, it is International Chess Day. It's a rare Monday show, but you got stuff cooking. I have nothing cooking, so I'm following your lead. Let's get them shout-outs out early. Shout-out Variety Sports. Shout-out Darren, Fatboy Fadeaway Sports. Shout-out the Double Double Podcast. Is Tyler and Darren now, are they doing a show together, and now it's no longer? Like, TMB is full hiatus, so now Tyler is with Darren doing Fatboy Fadeaway. What's that? Is there some type of explanation that I've missed? I've been in the hills. I've fucking been everywhere the past 2 weekends. So I don't know if I missed.
I've seen Darren do his own thing. And shout out to the guys who were like, you know what? I'm going to be so fucking cool. I'm just going to film myself while I talk about my podcast. I have not had the balls to really do that. But shout out to Darren. Shout out to Tyler. And you know what? Our boy Brian, even BJ, went on and did his own little video cast and was talking about the 49ers draft. So whether the Double Double is
Brian
on,
his own?
TMB is on.
Oh,
yeah, he did. He's got his own little thing that he put
Wait
out.
A
not
second.
Too long ago.
Was I'm telling you, I've been gone for the past 2 weekends. Like,
so I've been catching up with their stuff, their takes, and I like some of their takes. I like the take that Tyler had talking about is Nikola Jokic now the biggest whiner in the NBA?
I saw you get in on that.
He is a big, huge whiner, but I'm telling you, he's the best of the best in the world right now. I'm telling you, there's no one better than Jokic.
And, zero basketball takes this week.
Shout out, real quick, only basketball take I have. Shout out to my boy Jason right here, who just magnificently picked. It will be a gentleman's sweep, the Nuggets over the Lakers, which hasn't happened yet, but I'm guessing it will. The Lakers pull off a game three or a game four win, so they will have to go to game five.
Also, no one wants to pat themselves on the back 3 minutes into the show, Jess, but yes, the Timberwolves take.
Timberwolves.
Too easy. Too easy.
I did not see that implosion coming one bit, but I should have. And I will point out that while I was in the gym today, they were showing a replay. Bradley Beal coming over. He had scored a bucket towards the end of the game. They were going to lose no matter what. The head coach is like, hey, man, nice shot. And Double B simply smacks his hand away and walks to the bench.
Yeah.
The implosion started in probably like late season, and unfortunately it ended in a playoff sweep for the Phoenix Suns. That's tough. That's a tough one to swallow when you got that team.
No basketball takes this.
No basketball.
I'm canning my Warriors grand finale take, possibly revealed next week when we have a little bit more time, when we're going to get more in-depth into the playoffs. With me being off the grid the last 2 weeks, I was literally 2 weeks ago in the hills next to the Pacific Ocean trying to get texts from my boys on the Ryan Garcia fight at like 11 at night. It was I just needed some intel because I had a feeling that that fight was going to get wonky, but not that wonky. But
no, that fight got wonky.
We can save that for the combat sports.
We should.
My point is, I've missed so much basketball. I've missed a ton of the stuff in the East. I've watched a lot more of the stuff in the West, of course. I've been telling you guys, everyone knew what the sexy series were going to be. So we landed on those, right? We knew what those were going to be.
Yeah.
We knew what the talking points were going to be. We were ahead of the curve when we previewed a month's worth of basketball last show or the show before that, Jess.
Yeah.
So we'll keep it moving. We're going to keep it on topic in the NFL.
Let's hit the draft.
But shout out Shay Rollins, Chef Shay Rollins on X. Twitter, whatever we're calling it, just looking diesel, looking
hashtag geeky. Swole and out of control.
Shout out Justin Von Boom. I know he's been working on that book. I see him on Threads talking about book stuff, so shout out him.
His son just recently got his first win in a baseball game, so Owen.
His son also drew a dope picture of The Rock that even included the tattoo. Did you see that?
I saw the picture.
Dude, that was so dope.
I'm telling you. Creativity begets creativity.
At its finest. Jess, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay, I pressed that thing. Tell me what, I'm still with you. Something's out of my screen. I'm getting away from the screen. All right. Shout out to all our boys. You know we love you. You know where to follow us. Everyone knows where to follow everybody.
That's right.
Shout out everyone for listening once again. We appreciate you.
Spotify listeners, again, you're winning the battle of the podcast listeners.
I think I do a poor job of promoting the Apple podcast, and Jess, you just don't promote it. So there's that. You go so heavy on the Spotify. I think you see those numbers and they just get you hashtag horn and you go promote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The worst thing is I can't even see our Apple numbers. I want to see our Apple numbers, but I can't. I don't know how.
Who can we get a hold of?
I'm gonna have to get a hold of who's the guy who's in control of Apple and be like, hey brother, I want to take a bite of the Apple myself, like show me my numbers. What's going on here, bro? Show me my numbers.
Okay. Jess, let's keep it moving here. I'm so glad that we're coming in on a Monday on an international chess day. The pump was fantastic for me this morning. I'm feeling good. Pump was clearly fantastic for you. We're going to jump right into the NFL draft. So I did watch this. And shout out to the NFL draft day 2 and 3, which just fucking fly by.
I fucking love that. That's the best part.
As opposed to day 1, where it's like, what is taking so long? This is taking too. It should not take like 4 hours to get to, pick 30. We're starting to feel like the end of AEW Dynasty and shit, where it's like, we're doing 5 hours of this shit, y'all? All right. So, Jess, let's kind of tap a little bit on 1 through 10. You wanted to touch on 1 through 10. You watch a lot more college than me, so I might be giving you the ball and letting you run here. We'll discuss our teams. We'll give Justice some sleepers, some opportunity as well. Want to pick his brain on some of those mid and late round picks that he liked.
They're the most fun picks to talk about, to be honest.
I gotta check my phone because there's another. My dad was texting me about this quarterback, and he wanted him on the Vegas Raiders so bad. And the guy that ended up in New Orleans and is going to end
Rattler,
up competing.
Spencer
yes.
Rattler.
Dude, my dad was all over Rattler. Shout out my dad who was like just heavy a Rattler guy. He was like, I'll take Rattler over AOC. And I'm like, boy, you're fucking crazy. But
That's a wild
all
pick.
Right. So, Jess, pick number 1. We kind of knew where it was going. I don't have
to. Yeah.
me, but I real quick, I'm a Caleb guy. I despite all the stuff with the nails and you could pick on him for being a little bit of a mama's boy, I guess you would say, because he went up in the stands. There's a little bit of receipts, if you will. But I think he'll be okay. I think he's going to be good at the next level. How good he's going to be, I'm not so sure. I'm not too sure about a lot of these dudes other than one. But give me some thoughts.
So I gave Caleb Williams a ton of shit during his final season at SC. And I did not do enough talking about how bad that SC team actually was. So the fact that he put the numbers up that he did, the yards, the touchdowns, the few scrambles, I do have to give him the credit for being the quarterback that he was during his time at SC, despite the fact that they didn't really go anywhere. That team was pretty fucking bad. I like Caleb Williams going to Chicago. I think he will fit that offense better than Justin Fields. Justin Fields had the unfortunate part of being, a whole 5'9" or whatever he was. Like, the guy's shorter guy, smaller hands guy, and definitely more of a runner. Caleb's not a runner. He's a scrambler, and I think that there's a difference between the two, and I think that most sports fans can figure that out. I think that Caleb Williams is more of a pocket guy. He prefers to throw the ball. And the Bears did a great thing by dropping down, I believe it's pick 9, where they went and got him a number one wide receiver out of that deal to pair up alongside DJ Williams, who also got an extension in Chicago. So he's got the offense. So here's the thing with Caleb Williams. I know he's a rookie. Rookie quarterback is probably one of the most difficult positions to come in and play right off the bat, and that's what he's going to do. Because now you're taking on NFL defenses. These guys are 6'5", 300 pounds, and they run 4.4 40s. They will get to you. They will put pressure on you. And they've seen the receipts, and they want to create some of their own. They want to knock you in the mouth. They're going to want to knock you down. And he's got a lot to prove to the world this next season. I think if the Bears just play him simple, allow him a tiny bit of freedom, but mostly stick to the script type stuff, the offense around him will do him well. I think he'll put up solid numbers and be in the race for offensive rookie of the year.
I don't want to zag on the pick, but I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from this team has added so much.
Definitely.
If they struggle, right? If they don't struggle, or if they kind of stay the flow, if you will, maybe go 500 or 9-7 or 7-10, I guess. I keep forgetting about that extra game, Jess. Then maybe say, all right, well, there's progression, which is great because you're getting progression out of your rookie quarterback with all these added pieces. I know they shored up the line as well. We're going to have to check in with our boy Chris W. Powers and see his thoughts.
Definitely.
What's cooking with the Bears. But I know one of my Bears homies who I bullshit with all the time. He's excited. Let's jump into that second pick here, Jess. Quarterback again comes off the board. Washington Commanders. It's Daniels, right? I don't want to fuck this
kid's name up. Jaden Daniels, yes.
I don't want to fuck this kid's name up and call him McDaniels, but I feel like I'm going to be calling him McDaniels a lot just because I know a McDaniel. But the Daniels thing to me got interesting, Jess, because there was the whispers of maybe Vegas can make a move was out there. On top of, Big Daddy Shannon Sharp had this guy on his show and asked him the question about plan for his former coach, Pierce, AP, Coach AP. And he got real excited when he was talking about that. And so that drew some headlines within itself. But Washington, I believe, does the right thing. I think anytime you have a shot at a franchise quarterback, you got to take it, Jess. I am once again going to say, Echo, I'm not sure where the ceiling is with this kid. Give me some thoughts.
I'm going to be honest. This is where people will probably go back to saying that I'm just a Caleb Williams hater. But I honestly think that Jaden Daniels is a overall better suited quarterback for the NFL than Caleb Williams. He's got a bigger arm. He's got scrambling ability. He's got good eyesight downfield. His accuracy is good. He's very accurate throughout college football, his time at LSU. And I know that he's throwing to some big time dudes at LSU, but I mean, still, you got to get him the ball, right? Jaden Daniels has been a superb quarterback throughout his entire collegiate career. I would not go as far as to say he would be the number one pick, but I'm telling you, like, if I had to, man, I would struggle between who I wanted more, Caleb or Jaden. Chicago is a tough place to play because of the weather. Washington is also a tough place to play with the weather. But I like Jaden Daniels' game. And I think that big ass arm is really going to help him out. Because, I mean, you look at guys like, you know, Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes got a big arm. Justin Herbert's got a big arm. Josh Allen, my boy, he's got a big arm. And sometimes having that big arm will help you overcome bad situations, because you can just chuck that bad boy down the field 70 yards and just hope and pray something happens, or maybe you overthrow a guy or whatever. At least you have a shot downfield. Jaden Daniels has that type of arm strength and talent. I think that that's going to serve him well, whereas Caleb Williams has a decent arm, but he's going to be more of a guy who's going to try to dump it off a lot. He's going to try to hit those mid routes. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I like him in Washington. Washington also added a lot of pieces, so I'm going to echo off you with your thoughts on Chicago. Washington has almost no excuses to perform very well this season.
No.
They now have their franchise guy.
Yes, rookie new coach. And a rookie quarterback.
I'm telling you, though, they got the talent. Talent outplays coaching at some points and times in the game. And they have a lot of talent on that field. Now, the coach is going to have to get his shit together real quick. He's going to have to pull that locker room together. But they've made some good moves. Austin Eckler is now the running back in Washington. So now Jaden Daniels, he's got an all-pro running back. He's got some good receivers out there. I'm telling you, Washington's defense was like a top five, top seven defense last year. They really can't afford to drop, is what I'm saying. Chicago they can't afford to drop either, because they didn't win very many games. So you would expect Chicago to win a few more games. Washington needs to win a couple more games to show that all these draft picks, all these signings and stuff really are going towards like the future of the franchise.
This is an interesting take to me. And I see Washington progression again, the same as Chicago, especially in the East, where Dallas is still going to be okay or good, hopefully.
Philly.
And Philly. Like, those are the two teams in the East you're chasing. So I see 6-7 wins as progression for Washington, and I would assume their fans would think the same. I'm not sure. My whole thing is this, Jess. When you're bringing in a new coach, he's usually bringing in entirely new coaching staff or a few pieces within the coaching staff where they're trying to change the regime and the way shit is ran from the floor up. So I think that usually takes some time, at least a year or two, before you see the true effects of that. That to me isn't usually like a 7 to 10 game turnaround, but we shall see. I feel the same way here with the third pick, Drake May, that I do the last two, which is I don't know where, you know, his long-term trajectory is, and I don't have as much confidence in him as I do Penix, who we will talk about. But give me some thoughts. The Patriots had to make a move. I don't think it was a bad move. I think we're so used, Jess, to the Belichick's going to do the chess, not checkers. He's going to trade down. He'll run a bad quarterback or a mid quarterback for 16 games and just build equity, build that team up with pieces. But new coach, new quarterback, new era, if you will, Jess, give me some thoughts.
It is a new era in New England. Foxborough, you know, if I was Foxborough fans, I would be on edge of my seat in just with anxiety, just trying to figure things out. I am not hot on this pick. I understand why they made it, because the quarterback position was not super deep in this class. But Drake May has been getting a lot of credit, and this is a kid who played in the ACC. I believe it's North Carolina he came from, and the ACC doesn't have the type of defenses that even the Pac-12 had with Caleb, and then the can't remember what division LSU plays for. Going on, both those two teams, LSU and USC, both played against high-level, NFL defense-ready type players. Whereas North Carolina and the ACC playing against much lesser competition, got teams like Duke, you know what I mean? I mean, And Drake May had some good games. He showed that he was a very accurate quarterback. But again, it's hard to tell with a guy like him because he didn't play in a big conference. And the ACC is not known to be a powerhouse football conference. So I really don't like the pick. I think it was kind of a scramble to take whatever quarterback that was left that they could make, work.
Best available.
Best available. One thing that this kid has is he's ginormous. He's 6'4", like 215 pounds. Yep. He also has a big arm. Most comparisons that I've heard of Drake May is Justin Herbert. They say he's a lot like Justin Herbert. He's built like Herbert. He throws like Herbert. Well, here's the thing, though. Herbert also came from the Pac-12, played against very good Stanford defenses, Washington defenses. He led that team to a couple of bowl games. I don't know where Drake May's led North Carolina. I don't know what he's won. But here he sits at the number three position in New England, which I'm telling you, it's going to be a tough place to play because when you're the quarterback in New England, guess who they compare you to? Tom fucking Brady. It's not fair. It's not fair to do, but that's what they had for 20-plus years and several Super Bowl championships. So Drake May's ceiling, I think, is far less than both Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels. But we'll see. Maybe the Patriot way can bring something out of him.
It's crazy. There's like a handful of teams, and it's like the Niners and Montana / Young, the Broncos and Elway. There's just like a handful of teams, you know, the Packers with – Favre and Rodgers. It's just a handful. It's like, that's the bar, dude. you know what, man? So we'll move to the fourth pick. To me, this kind of feels pretty self-explanatory. Best available player on the board, best wide receiver. Some would say the best player in the entire draft, Marvin Harrison. Shout out to Arizona for not making the mistake of trading this pick. I love this pick. I think he's going to thrive. Jess, give me some thoughts.
He's shown that he's the best receiver in the draft. He's going to be a quality wide receiver one from day one. You know, Kyler Murray, if he sticks around, is going to have a big, tall, strong target to throw to down the field. Harrison Jr., he can run routes. He's got a pretty decent sized route tree. So I'm not worried about him continuously learning more routes. He's got good, quick feet, and I think that things will be fine with him for sure.
So let's just cut it right at me saying the Marvin Harrison pick. Go ahead.
Marvin Harrison Jr. is by far the best receiver in the class. I think that he's the most talented, both physically and just skill set wise. He's tall. He's big. He's got a huge catch radius. Playing for Ohio State means that he played against very top-notch corners each and every game that he played, and he still put up amazing stats. He comes from a great bloodline. We all remember Marvin Harrison. I mean, guy was catching everything that Peyton Manning threw to him, right? Like, come on now. When you have the bloodline and then you have just the way that he has – I mean, he's much bigger than his dad. Like, he's – you know, dude's like 6'3", 6'4". He's huge. And like I said, he does everything right. He's got a decent sized route tree. I think that the coaching will build on that, and he will be able to kind of concrete those medium to smaller routes. He's used to just kind of cutting it out deep. I think that they'll kind of work with him on those intermediate routes, which will be a good thing for him. And it gives Kyler Murray a huge target to throw to every week. And remember the type of year that Kyler had when he had D-Hop. Mm-hmm. I mean, so this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a younger, you know, probably stronger D-Hop
with the Murray that's a little bit more experienced, and you would optimistically think a better IQ.
Yeah, so I think that this pick is great. I think I'm confused because I was looking at CBS, and they have their like little gradings for the draft picks, and Marvin Harrison Jr. got a B+. To me, I think this is a straight A+. I mean, A+, whatever you want to give him. I mean, there was no other player on the board at that time that Arizona should have picked above Marvin Harrison Jr. I think it's a great pick. And like we, like I said, it gives Kyler Murray another option like he had back when he was in MVP talks at one point in time when he was thrown to D-Hop. So now he's got another D-Hop-like receiver to throw the ball to.
Yeah, I love it. I think we got a peanut butter and jelly type scenario there. I'm very intrigued in seeing what happens. And it's so interesting considering, I mean, on this show, how many times they trade Kyler Murray to the Raiders. I mean, just them alone. So this could be an absolute career resurrection for him in Arizona. And so we'll see what happens. The Los Angeles Chargers at 5 go Joe Alt. So this one to me, Jess, if we're going to talk about curveballs, I think I started to sip a little bit of that media Kool-Aid. Harbaugh is slick. He's going to trade down. He's going to pick up picks. He did not. He did what I think is a brilliant move, and he got his boy, his QB, a little bit of protection. Felt like watching Herbert in a lot of games the last 2 years. He was scrambling. Those happy feet were getting happy. So I think this is a fantastic pick, Jess. Give me some thoughts.
I do too. Joe Alt's probably, you know, he's. I don't know if he's the best tackle in this group. There's a lot of really good, solid tackles in this draft, but he is definitely the biggest. 6'8", 330 pounds. The guy's a fucking Mack truck. It's going to be so hard to get around him, push him around. And the best thing is, like you said, Herbert was getting knocked around. He's been injured the last couple of years. And the best way to keep your quarterback upright and healthy is by getting him a big-ass blindside tackle. Joe Alt's going to provide that and some more. He can play several positions, so if somebody gets injured and he has to move around a little bit, that's fine with him. But sticking him on that tackle, that left side, he is going to give Herbert some sense of security.
The big hoss. I think he's got to have a big fucking hoss.
He is a big hoss.
Giants, another one, full smoke screen. Maybe a lot of Giants fans, maybe a lot of the first take producers saying, boy, wouldn't JJ look great right here at 6? And again, I was sipping that Kool-Aid. I thought maybe this is where Minnesota moves up because all these quarterbacks are gone. Who knows? Giants stand pat, and they take Malik Nabers. I don't think this was an early pick. I know a lot of people said you can compare Harrison to Nabers. I think they're different cats, but give me some thoughts on this.
I do too. Even size-wise, they're different. The way that they run, they're both great receivers in their own right. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a little bit more complete of a receiver. But Malik Nabers is still a guy who's shown in his college career that he can definitely go out there and he can catch the ball. He did some damage over at LSU, catching a lot of passes from Jaden Daniels, actually. Mm-hmm. I think Nabers fits in well with the New York football Giants because they really have no other receivers. They have been basically spending cash on a bunch of washed-up has-been receivers, hoping that they can come back to life over the past 3 years that they've had Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones... obviously, I would put him as a mid quarterback, but he's got the arm talent, and he's a big dude. Maybe what he needs is just a actual true number one receiver to throw the ball to. I don't know yet. I still think everything in New York, as far as the Giants are concerned, falls on Daniel Jones's shoulders. That's yet to be seen. I know they went and picked up a backup quarterback to kind of compete, but still, like, there's no big names. It's just Daniel Jones. He's going to start the season. He's going to ride out the season. Having a guy like Malik Nabers is going to be kind of a good safety blanket for him to have. I think Nabers is a great pick for them.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys fans like myself have been very fortunate to get those Beckham nightmares out of our head for the past few years, and the Giants have just been without a true wide receiver. And I feel like the tight end they had over there the last 2 years, Waller the Baller, might have been their best, or Saquon might have been their best options when it comes to throwing the ball. Maybe this is a scenario where, again, that offensive-minded coach gets Daniel Jones into premium positions and they can get that ball deep to Nabers. I am intrigued. I ain't going to lie. Tennessee Titans, they go safe. They go with a big hoss from Alabama, J.C. Latham. Is this going to be Billie Jean is not our lover's protection?
Yeah, this is Billie Jean. He's not our lover. This is his, it's his blind side. It's his guy. And when you're 6'6", 360 pounds, I would hope that you can block some people. He's basically a human wall. The one thing about Latham that I don't like as much as Ault a couple picks earlier is that his feet are not as quick. Ault, for such a big dude, has very quick feet. He can get out of bad situations positionally and get himself recorrected quicker. Latham is kind of just a power guy, so he's going to try to push and push and push. Some of these speed guys will have the opportunity to get around him, but he is 360 damn pounds, so like it's going to take a lot to even try to get around him. I think it was the safe pick, and honestly, Tennessee doesn't really need much of anything. They were in that position where they could kind of pick safe without going overboard, so I'm okay with the pick.
Yep, I'm a big fan of anytime you could add to your interior line, anytime you could shore up your line, I'm for it. I don't think there's ever such a bad such a thing as a bad pick when you're picking your line, when you're offensive or defensive. Here's the first wow moment of the night. The first LMG, right? Michael Penix to the Atlanta Falcons. Was this eight, seven or eight? What was this, eight? Right?
This was the eighth pick.
So I think I made it pretty clear on this show and on the old Twitter machine. I am a big Penix guy. I love the Penix. And I think he's going to be very successful. I think him being drafted to Atlanta and being behind Cousins works well for their offensive skeleton, if you will, because I think Cousins and Penix are kind of the same dude, other than one being a southpaw and the other not. You know, they're guys that need to stay in the pocket and throw. They don't really have a lot of giddy up behind their feet. They're more of some guys that can get you that ball where it needs to be, and they got that boom cannon rocket style arm. I love the pick. I mean, $100 million of guaranteed money. I know we've been hearing that so much the last few days. Yeah, so Cousins with $100 million guaranteed. In my opinion, if you end up trading them, you know, in the middle of the season, when maybe there's a team that's desperate for a quarterback and in the running, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Or if you sit him for a few weeks, you know, if we sit the entire season, the way quarterbacks did when we were kids, the way quarterbacks did back in the day, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I understand that you want to get a player that you can plug in now because you want to win now, but Atlanta's truly probably two or three seasons away from truly being competitive, right? I know the South is a toss-up, and anyone in the South can go 9-8 and win that division. Might be 1-10 in the South that ends up winning that division. But I think it's a wise play, Jess. Give me some thoughts.
So I also like Michael Penix Jr. a lot. I really do. As a quarterback, as a person, I've never seen him get out of pocket. Like, the kid is a good kid. He's also very young. Well, he's not that young. I guess he's 24. So he's an older cat, actually.
He's NFL quarterback young.
He's NFL quarterback young. But here's the thing. Two things that come to mind when they drafted him. First, I thought they were going to pick Rome Odunze to add to that offense. Give Kirk Cousins another receiver. Go along with the kid they drafted last year from SC, who had a pretty good year. The tight end that they got. And then I believe they have Bijan Robinson now. So, like, I was just thinking, hey, man, go for offense. That's what the league's built on these days, is offense. And they did go offense, just not the way that I thought they were going to go. To me, it's a wash pick unless you are planning on trading Cousins after year two. You don't want to give him up after this year. You owe him way too much money, and no team's going to take that on. So
I don't know.
I mean, the Stephon Diggs thing was a big deal, right? Buffalo was really trying to hold on to Diggs because they owed him so much money, but they don't owe him. They didn't owe him Kirk Cousins' money. Kirk Cousins is a made man. Like, and here's the other thing too. I get the thought of drafting a young quarterback when you have a 34-year-old quarterback in the pocket, but Kirk Cousins still has a good couple solid years, and he's never really truly been injured. So, and then you have the offense that you have around Kirk Cousins. He's going to get the ball to some people. I mean, when he had Justin Jefferson, he you know, he basically burned the league up. Now, come playoff time, that's a totally different story. But, you know, Cousins can definitely sling the rock. And you got Bijan Robinson back there, so you don't even have to sling the rock as much. So it takes pressure off of Cousins. And yet you go and draft a young kid who's basically built like Cousins, except, you know, 10, 11 years younger. So I was confused with that. Second thought is this. If you decide to play Cousins through his 4 years, which I do not think is going to happen, not now, but if you did, you now have a near 30-year-old quarterback that you drafted to take over for your quarterback at the helm now. You're going from, you know, one guy who's a little bit older and possibly headed towards the door to a guy who's, you're kind of soaking up his prime years. If Penix serves 5 years, right? If they pick up his fifth, he would be 29 years old. That's not the position that you want to be in when you're looking for a franchise quarterback.
The only
at that point in time, you're looking for another quarterback.
The only argument I can make to that is quarterbacks can play into their 35, 38, 40. What is fucking Cousins right now? 36, 38 or some shit like
that. Yeah, I think
so,
Cousins is like 34.
So I know not everyone's Tom Brady, but majority of these quarterbacks now can play in between that 35 to 40 spot. So while I can see the thought process of why I like the pick, Let's keep it moving here. Let's jump into Romo Dunze. You mentioned earlier that you thought this was great for Chicago. Chicago's been bolstering up. They've been getting thick here offensively. Give me some scratch of service thoughts here.
I love this kid. I love how he plays. I love his the passion he brings to the game. He's a team guy. He's a locker room guy. He's a leader. I got the opportunity to watch him multiple times play against Oregon in the Pac-12 out here on the West Coast. And so, like, I've seen him play. I've seen what he can do. And he's a very, very fluid receiver. And he's fairly big. So he's going to have some size. He's going to be able to bully some of those smaller corners. And Caleb Williams, you know, again, Caleb Williams had the guy that Atlanta had. I can't remember the kid's name now. All of a sudden, I'm losing names. But Caleb Williams had his number one guy who went to Atlanta last year. Caleb had a really great year, and now Caleb gets to throw to Roma Dunze, who is possibly I would have taken Odunze over Malik Nabers, to be honest. But I thought it went Marvin Harrison Jr.
I've heard that take too, though.
Yeah, so I my thought process was Marvin Harrison Jr., Odunze, and then Nabers, and then a couple guys down below, right?
Yep.
Even though the wide receiver draft class was super deep, there was only like the two guys that I thought were in the elite class, which I felt was Harrison Jr. and Odunze, and then Nabers, and then Brian Thomas Jr. and some of these other cats I thought were kind of that second tier down. Not bad, but just not elite. I think the Bears get themselves a fantastic number two to go outside of DJ Williams. Like I said earlier, DJ Williams got a contract extension in Chicago. Chicago's beefed up their offense, their skilled players. And they have now their franchise quarterback. So I expect Odunze to have a pretty good rookie year.
Yep. Again, there's going to be some expectations on Chicago coming into this year. So it'll be interesting because that's still a pretty tough division, especially with Detroit. I think a lot of people are going to be picking Detroit to possibly win the NFC this year. All right, Jess. I had J.J. McCarthy going anywhere from 4 to 40, and the guy was all over the place. Minnesota sits flat. They end up getting him here at 10. So here's the thing with McCarthy, my quick 2 cents. I think anytime you're coached by a guy, by a Harbaugh who has NFL experience at every level, both playing and coaching, and you play at a school like Michigan that plays a pro-style offense and has coaches that could possibly coach in the pros, you're going the right way. Now, what is his ceiling? Again, I don't know. You know, when we talk about all five of these quarterbacks, I would probably go Penix 1, and then after that, Caleb 2. That just feels easy to me. Caleb 1 and then Penix 2. I'm sorry. Let me reverse that real quick. But after that, I don't know. I would probably maybe go McCarthy just because I've also seen him in big games and win big games. I know college and the NFL are two separate things, but I don't know. Give me some thoughts, Jess.
This to me, Minnesota needs some stuff, man. Like they need players on both sides of the ball. They need special teams. I know they got Justin Jefferson, and I'll be straight up honest right now. If I'm Minnesota, I go straight into rebuild mode and I trade Justin Jefferson for more picks. That's what I would have done for the draft. That's what I would have done for the draft. I would have just stockpiled picks. I would have traded Justin Jefferson somewhere. I would have got some picks out of that deal, obviously, and then I would have been able to stockpile some players into my franchise. J.J. McCarthy never gave me any type of elite feel when he was playing in Michigan. Michigan was very much a run-first team, a short-pass team. He never really had to toss the rock, as we like to say, the pigskin. He never really was forced into those situations, and when he did, he was never very accurate with the football. He had some guys downfield that can catch the ball that they all got drafted this year too. Brian Thomas Jr., Roman Wilson, Cornelius Johnson, some of these guys, they all got drafted. He had talent, but the kid never shot off the page when I watched him play. Does he make smart plays? Sure. But they're all very easy plays to make. You know what I mean? When you're trying to make a smart play, drop it off to the running back, drop it off to your tight end.
That's what you want. But that's what, as an NFL coach, you love it.
I'm just saying, again, the NFL is such offense driven that a guy like McCarthy, to me, McCarthy reminds me of Mitchell Trubisky. Trubisky came into the league playing very similar football. Why? He had very similar football to what JJ plays. Trubisky came in, obviously went to a very bad Chicago Bears team, and they gave him absolutely nothing. And then he went on to play for a couple other teams, including Pittsburgh, including Buffalo, like second string guy. I expect, and this is super harsh, and I'm sorry, JJ, but I expect JJ to be a second string quarterback by the end of his first contract.
You just went so hard. I wasn't ready for that one. I'm so glad. I almost feel like I'm going to leave it right there. I just please give me some scratch of service thoughts on Bo Nix to Denver, please.
Bo Nix is another guy that kind of lands in that Trubisky, you know, second string quarterback guy. Like,
wow.
The reason I say this is because when he came to Auburn, which is where he started his collegiate career, he was supposed to be like the wunderkind of quarterbacks. He could throw, he could run, he was tough. He was supposed to be a lot like, hot damn, who's that Florida quarterback that, you know, the Christian guy?
Come on, my boy Tim Tebow?
Tim Tebow. He was supposed to be like a Tim Tebow, built like Tebow, you know, big-ass muscles, you know, slick haircut. Had a bit of an arm, could run the ball, wasn't, you know, showed no fear in the face of defensive linemen. But the kid just crumbled. He crumbled under competition. And then going to Oregon at the time of the Pac-12, I have to say, much less competition than in the past. Stanford was completely out of the picture. They were a bottom-tier Pac-12 team. Washington was on the up and up. But yet Washington beat Bo Nix twice. So let's not forget that either. So Washington was a better team, and Bo Nix had the talent. You know, he had several guys get drafted from his offense. I don't like the fact that he's a smaller quarterback. I don't like the fact that he relies on the talent to kind of make the plays. Quarterbacks have to put the ball where they need to put the ball. I don't think that Nix is going to be able to do that consistently. The Denver offense is not complete yet. Like, I know that they drafted his boy out of Oregon, Troy Franklin, which I'm pissed because I wanted Franklin in Buffalo. But Troy Franklin is going to be a blanket for him because he played with him for nearly 3 years.
He's got his guy.
So he's got his guy. But that does not make an offense run. They don't really have a run game. Their offensive line is shoddy. And, again, I'm going to go back to the fact that Bo Nix is just kind of a smaller dude. I mean, you can scramble against some of those defenses in college football, but there's not a lot of defenses that you can consistently scramble against and make yardage when you're, you know, 6 foot tall. You know, basically they were talking about him kind of looking like a Drew Brees. Except he's not quite. I don't believe that he's going to have the accuracy Drew Brees had. And, you know, again, we're going to go back to the fact that defenses are fast and they're big and they're strong. And I think that Bo Nix is going to have a tough time learning the game.
I think that's a key factor here with a lot of these quarterbacks. And that's where I believe someone like McCarthy, possibly Nix, some of these guys are going to thrive because they played in big games. They played in bigger conferences, but we shall see. Jesse, give me some scratch the surface thoughts. Anyone that maybe enticed you or surprised you in these middle rounds?
No, there's a lot of picks in the middle rounds. I was surprised that some of the wide receivers went as late as they went. One guy, I am absolutely confused as to why the Chargers picked. They took a guy, Ladd McConkey, out of Georgia. I watched him play. Yes, he's a serviceable wide receiver, but he's a little bit on the smaller side. And he's going to have to play slot in the NFL, and that's a tough position to play in the NFL. And I don't think that Ladd McConkey's got the speed necessarily to get past some of those linebackers and even those corners. I think that, you know, Joe Alt was a great pick for them, but there were so many other receivers that they could have picked, and then they go with Ladd McConkey. I think it was a safe pick for Harbaugh. Obviously, Harbaugh saw McConkey play a lot, like in college, you know, being Michigan, Georgia, and that kind of thing. But I was super confused about that pick.
You got to hope he's got some sticky hands, especially if you're playing slot and you don't have a ton of speed. You got to have those Ricky Prohl sticky hands.
That's right.
Can I give you a few scratch the surface thoughts on the Cowboys draft? And then we can hop to Bills, hashtag Bills Mafia.
That's right. Let's hear it.
Yeah, I fucking loved it. I mean, I don't think it was an A+. I went in with low expectations and they fucking knocked it out of the park. I went, man, I really hope they show up the line. We need some guys on offense to protect Dak. Our line looked like shit in some spots last year. We lost guys. Guys left. I might have had a guy retire. Fuck, we need guys to shore up our line. And they did that. They picked up offensive tackle in the first and the third round.
Big ass dude too.
I think they picked up a hell of a shot, maybe a stone's throw guy in like the fifth or sixth round. This Nathan Thomas, big hoss out of Louisiana. They picked a receiver up. We'll see how it goes. These receivers this late in the draft, you know, 216 are kind of hit and miss.
Flournoy, by the way, is a speed guy. Which I don't know if sometimes speed doesn't correlate to the NFL, but he is a very fast kid.
Looks like they got a flying Hawaiian out of Notre Dame.
That's my favorite pick.
Oh, you love that pick?
I love that pick. I fucking love that pick. This kid's going to be amazing in Dallas. He's the way that defense runs is very linebacker driven. He's going to kill it in Dallas.
Put him on the other side of Parsons.
Love that kid.
Let's see what he's got. And also the Western Michigan kid. His highlights pop for me too at the defensive end. So I am overall very happy. I did a little bit of peeking on some of the draft scores. I saw a lot of B's, B pluses, and I saw some A's. I think I only saw like one C. So overall, I saw a lot of positive grades, if you will. Jess, give me some thoughts on Bills Mafia. I didn't pay a ton of attention to what they did, other than night one, when every single person on NFL Twitter decided to pile on Buffalo and go, what are you doing trading down with Kansas City, the team that beats you on the reg in the playoffs, to give them a receiver when you guys are dying at receiver? Just give me some thoughts on the overall Bills draft and also that moment, because I don't believe you were happy either.
I was not happy. I'll start with this. Brandon Bean is a very good draft GM. But the problem is he has these guys that he meets and he falls in love with. Mm. And he doesn't want to let go of them.
He's easily swooned.
He's very swooned. He's swooned to the max.
Swoonable.
Deon Coleman ended up being our first pick of the draft. He was the first pick of the second round. After we traded back from 24 to 28 with Kansas City, and then from 28 to 33 with Carolina, trading to Kansas City, I'll start there real quick. You never give the ability to let the team that's beaten you consistently in the playoffs have the chance to take a guy that could help your team win. Xavier Worthy obviously was not a guy that Bean liked. Okay, I get that. Again, he's easily swooned as well as easily turned away, and he was obviously turned away from Xavier Worthy. Worthy, if people remember, ran a 4.21 40, the fastest in NFL history. It is a 40. 4.21 is incredibly fast. He also has drops. He had some drop issues the year before last. He seemingly got rid of some of those, so obviously showed that he was progressing in his wide receiver position. He's a little bit on the smaller side, very quick, though, and that's the type of receiver I think that fits Kansas City's offense 1,005,000%, which sucks because this kid's going to go out there and catch some weird, crazy passes from Patrick Mahomes and take him 80 yards to the house just because
against
speed alone.
Against the Buffalo Bills.
Against the Buffalo Bills.
What it matters.
Based on speed alone. This kid's just going to take shit to the house every time. And then Buffalo trades back with Carolina, and then who does Carolina get? Xavier Leggett. This is a big-time receiver who I really had on my board a lot for Buffalo to pick. Buffalo trades out to Carolina. Carolina goes right in and picks him up. So I am not happy at this point in time. We've let two receivers that I've had on my board go to Kansas City and the Carolina when we, as you mentioned, are in desperate need of a wide receiver. First pick of the second round, we draft Keon Coleman. Okay. I had Keon Coleman a third-round grade. Picking him up, first pick of the second round, really, you know, hurt my feelings, man. It did.
Me too, Jess. I always overemphasize those first 50 picks are so fucking important.
They are
70. You know, everything after like 75 to 100, in my opinion. The talent, depending on how rich the draft is, but for the most part, just, you know, statistically, the numbers show the players, you know, their overall production, career, all that development, that shit just drops off after a certain number, and it's usually like 75 to 100. So those first 50, again, as we mentioned with Penix, you want them to be plug-and-play guys. Want them to be guys that can either start week one or start week six, or once they figure it out, they're the guy. So that one to me just, you know, head scratcher, if you will.
Coleman to me is not a day one guy. We drafted a kid out of Florida year before last, Justin Shorter, who's built a lot like Coleman. You know, lighter side, taller guy. Shorter was supposed to be this guy who could come in and play right off the bat. Well, he ended up not even making the team and staying on the practice squad for last year, coming in and playing a few plays played a few plays with us last year, but never really has done anything. And then we basically go and draft his replica. And I get it. Like, the kid had some real highlight, you know, real type plays. Everybody, you know, keeps showing him hurdle a guy and then be like, oh, Josh Allen likes to hurdle guys. So they're meant for each other. That's not how fucking football works, people.
Unfortunately.
I mean, give me a break, man. Come on. So, again, I had Keon Coleman with a third round grade. We take him first pick of the second. I'm not super thrilled with it. The kid seems like a humble guy. I watched his interview. He was funny. He was cordial. He's very personable. His bit about, like, he got up after the interview and was like, hey man, can I go get some snacks now? That is funny, right? It's funny. He went and shared a moment with one of the Buffalo, you know, contributors, ate a cookie with her. That's great. But can this kid go play NFL football on day one? And that's what we're asking him to do. So it's going to be a very difficult position to kind of great through for the Bills come the offseason. Now, my one thing is the Buffalo Bills did go and get draft picks for next year, and they still have players that they can move. I would not put it past me if they still go after a Deebo Samuels or a Brandon Ayuk or one of these guys that are asking for trades. I would not put it past me because I do not think Buffalo goes into the season without a true wide receiver number one. I don't. As far as the rest of the draft, I thought it was strong. I think that the defensive guys, obviously Buffalo drafts defensive guys like water, and they typically work out really well. Cole Bishop out of Utah is safety, plays hard, plays fast, really downhill kind of guy, loves to truck running backs. He has issues staying with receivers, but that's, you know, obviously receivers got to get past the corners first. But I think he was a very, very solid pick. One of my favorite picks, or actually my favorite pick for the Buffalo Bills was Cedric Van Pran Granger, the center from Georgia. He was a 4-year starter at Georgia. Didn't allow a sack his entire collegiate career. My pick right now, hot take, is that this kid is starting center day one. This kid's going to bump some guys. They're going to move the line over. This kid's coming in. He's serving snaps to Josh Allen all year for the rest of the time that he's got on this contract. He's going to be serving. He's going to be serving up snaps to Josh Allen. And that's why I love this pick, because he's a day one guy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to keep it NFL friendly, but also seamlessly transition into the combat sports pro wrestling portion of the show. Sunday night, prior to the draft, AEW Dynasty, as we predicted, banger after banger after banger, as the kids like to say. Dynamite happens. We have this unique, I guess I can just a quick rewind again on this pay-per-view, if you will, Jess. They have the Young Bucks versus FTR match, as predicted here. Jungle Boy runs out, costs FTR the match.
It's Jungle almost Boy like you knew the script. Do you have an insider?
No, I wish.
Damn.
I'm ready to pay $10 a month for Meltzer, but I just, when it's time to give up the Visa, I never do. When we get to Wednesday, Jess, they do the Jungle Boys with the Elite. They bring out Tony Khan. It's a bit wacky. Jungle Boy gives them a hug. They embrace. They make up.
It was
past.
A Stone Cold Vince McMahon thing. I'm telling you.
It was, you know, and I mean, we're going to say a lot of nice things about AEW and Tony Khan right now. So let me say this. This was just kind of goofy to me. Just the whole thing. It just reeked of like, we know what's coming right now. The owner's about to get beat up. Let's get this over with.
It happens on every wrestling organization.
Ever in the history of wrestling. Like at some point, the owner... The they're gonna want Dixie Carter. I mean, you name them. They're gonna want to go through a table. So Tony Khan gets put in this. He gets punched in the stomach. He sells it poorly. He sells it like he gets punched in the face. And then he takes the Meltzer driver, which is the Tony Khan driver. But I believe it was changed to the Tony Khan driver at some point. So it's a real slap in the face. But this happens, and for about 18 hours, 99% of wrestling Twitter goes, well, if Tony Khan doesn't show up at the NFL draft without a neck brace on, it's all for nothing. It's just a bunch of bullshit. Like it was one of these things, Jess, where he is damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. It almost felt like he had no choice. So we get to the draft. They show the Jags. They show the insider war room shot. Of course, Tony Khan is he's some type of job with the Jags. I can't remember what it is, but he's got the neck brace on, Jess. He pulled it off. Every wrestling fan rejoices. Can you give me just a few thoughts on this moment?
You know what? So when the Tony Khan driver happened, first of all, the Elite did a great job of not actually hurting him.
Yeah, protecting a guy that's not a pro wrestler.
They are true fucking professionals, because they got this guy who's a wet noodle at like 135. I mean, they could have crushed his spine even by accident. Like, and shout out to Tony for being able to kind of tuck away, and at least he, you know, had some practice a little bit before this happened, because he wasn't actually injured, obviously. Like, but he played this off so well going into the draft. People were actually talking about it. Well, is Tony Khan going to wear the neck brace during the draft? Now, he's just a consultant with the Jacksonville Jaguars. His job with Jacksonville is not big. It's not important. It's just, you know, his dad was like, hey, you want a job here too? That's cool. I'll let you do some stuff or whatever. So he gets to sit in the booth and he gets to watch the picks getting made. And what is he doing? He's wearing the neck brace. And he was doing his best to like not move his head without the brace, like kind of move the entire top half of the body. I thought he sold it very well. He had 2 days of draft that he had to sit there with this neck brace on and sell the fact that he's hurt. Okay. And then you have Rich Eisen
Yes.
You'll have Rich Eisen talking about, man, well, I hope he's not hurt. Like, I hope he's okay.
They've won right there, Jeff. That's the moment that they've won.
That's it. Like, that's it. The AEW got over, and they didn't even have to have an event. Tony Khan sitting there with the neck brace helped get AEW over at one of the largest, biggest events that the NFL puts on every year. This is the NFL draft. And he did a solid job of selling it. I got to say, congrats to Tony. You 135-pound limp noodle. You did your job. You did your job, sir.
I'm just so proud of Tony for knowing there's only one way to do this. Again, damned if you do, damned if you don't. He really went the extra mile for all of us AEW fans that know, that protect him, that, you know, sometimes – are a little too protective of Tony, sometimes to our own fault as fans, to just say, here's your moment, Tony. We're going to give you your flowers. You know, you've been used as a pinata here recently by CM Punk and his fans. So let's go ahead and let's give you your flowers. And not just that, Jess, unless you're watching the Pat McAfee feed on Thursday night, there's, you know, what other time is pro wrestling being mentioned on the draft on any network? Not at all. But you see Tony in a neck brace, and all of a sudden, they've got to acknowledge it. They've got to, even if it takes 4 seconds for them to say, oh, there's Tony Khan, is the owner of that pro wrestling company. Let's say he got injured last night. Just, they have to acknowledge it. It makes me happy. Not only as an AEW fan, but just a fan of pro wrestling to still see, you know, as they say, kayfabe, live and well, live and thriving. Jess, I ran this by you. Let's run it by you real quick, and we'll keep it moving. We'll move on to the combat sports portion of the show. So while the NFL draft is happening, the WWE draft happens. Jess, when I brought this to your attention earlier, what was your reaction?
I didn't even know it was on. I had no clue. I had heard that the draft was happening. From
it was upcoming. You knew it was
after the WrestleMania stuff. You know, it was very, you know, big, right? People were talking about it. But then, like, and just a real quick take after WrestleMania, like you mentioned this the last show. There is a huge lull in pro wrestling, as far as WWE is concerned, at least, because you've just had the largest event that WWE can put on a year. And it was a very good show. It was 2 days of a bunch of really great matches, you know, that ended with a great story finish with the Cody Rhodes thing. And then you start talking about stuff like the WWE draft. Like And I'm gonna go a step further. I don't care where these guys get drafted. I just want to see you put on good wrestling matches.
Was there any draft pick, if you will, that was made that made it into your Twitter algorithm?
I didn't see one.
Okay,
I saw nothing happen. Okay. I saw that Bianca Belair went to, I believe, SmackDown.
So there's one. There's one.
Jey Uso went to Raw, I believe.
All right. So are you reading those right now, or you saw those?
I saw a couple earlier. I was just doing some referencing. And
all right,
the Bloodline is, the night for some reason. Why is the Bloodline on SmackDown with Jey Uso over on Raw? Like, why are we doing this?
I mean, why is the Bloodline get to go together as a package, but like – another team would not. To me, the whole thing is...
Well, I believe Alpha Squad or whatever their name is, they win as a team.
Do Gargano and his
Ciampa
go as a tag team?
Yeah, like...
We just saw like 5 tag teams in that tag team ladder match. Did any of those get broken up because of the draft?
It makes no sense to me.
My point is it's wasteful for 2 reasons. One... You're doing it the night of the actual draft. It's just going to get lost in the sauce. 2, you're doing it right after WrestleMania. So like you said, Jess, it's kind of going to get lost in the sauce. But 3, unless you're having big, relevant superstars either coming back or moving, it's not really going to move the needle.
It's really not. But I can't even think. I'm gonna pick this random name and tell me what you think. What if you saw Friday night during the draft just announced WWE draft to Raw Wardlow? You don't care? Wow. No. Wardlow? No pop for Wardlow?
No pop for Wardlow. I don't, you know what? I don't even have for Wardlow in AEW though. So
who would
they've misused AEW.
Okay, let me raise this absolute stakes. And drafted a SmackDown starting Friday night MJF.
That moves the needle.
So who
Just imagine, like, first off, MJF.
That's enormous.
Gets his, he's got Cody Rhodes, and now we can do this whole new story, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, we can sit here in fantasy book forever. What I want to do is try and find out who the AEW wrestler is that would make your head turn and go, oh, wow. Other than
Luchasaurus.
Oh, yeah, there you go. He's got the physique.
Physique, the size.
What about my boy?
Take that stupid-ass mask off, though. Give him a new creation.
What about my boy Powerhouse, Will Hobbs? Oh,
Hobbs would move the needle.
See, that's what I'm saying. If you saw Hobbs pop up, showing up on –
Hey, shout out to Hobbs, who actually injured his knee, and I think it's pretty serious.
Get well soon.
Get well soon to Powerhouse.
Injured in a match versus Mox and finished.
Yeah.
All right, Jess, I wanted to get your thoughts on the NFL draft. We'll keep it moving because if we start doing fantasy draft shit, we'll be here forever. UFC 301, as you mentioned, is this weekend. It is also very mama mid. It is one of the more just not a big sexy name that truly hops out to me. Not a big sexy fight that hops out to me. I mean, Aldo, I guess. But I mean, I feel like now that I'm reaching, are you looking at the prelims, Jess? Have you had a chance to glance the prelims?
Yeah. I mean,
anything out there jump out other than Carolina?
I don't see nothing, man.
I kind of like Joaquin Silva versus Jakar Close. That'll be a fun fight.
Yeah, I guess. Joaquin Silva, Jakar Close has been. He doesn't have a huge. He doesn't have like a huge record. Like he's not a lot of fights, but he has been in some good fights. And Joaquin Silva is a very solid all around guy. So I actually don't know why that fight's not on the actual prelim card.
That's what I was thinking. So, I mean, as always, obligatory, we downplay these fights, and they usually end up all being bangers. Let's get that out of the way. Okay, so I'm going to keep it moving. Jess, you ready to start some pick'ems?
Let's do it.
Paul Craig versus Kyle Barajo. Who you got?
Craig's real up and down. I think he just won his last fight. I don't know much about this Barajo guy, but his record says that he's damn good. I'm going to go with the Brazilian.
It feels to me like this is Paul Craig getting fed to Barajo.
Sounds like
if Craig doesn't get a takedown or anything like that, it's a quick stoppage. I like Barajo's TKO round one. Next fight, Michael Pereira versus Ihor Poteria. Jeff, who you got?
I like Pereira, man. I'm going to stick with the name of the champ. You know, Michael is he's a very solid, well-rounded guy. He hits hard. He's got big kicks. I believe his ground game is decent enough. Poteria is going to be more of not a defensive guy, but a takedown guy, a grappler. But I think Pereira's offense is going to be enough to at least get the decision.
Yeah, just lukewarm, this card. Let me tell you, I like Pereira. I think this goes all three rounds. I'd like to see maybe this is where Pretoria plants his flag and gets his star knockout of the moment, but I don't think it happens. I like Pereira in decision. Anthony Smith, we joked about this fight when they made it months ago, and here we are. He is once again returning to the cage, and he is fighting Vitor Petrino. You know, Jess, I saw a heavy push on that UFC after fight for Anthony Smith against Pereira. And I'm thinking, you got to be fucking joking. That fucking fight makes no sense. And I think Pereira would fucking kill him. I think Pereira's got to kill everybody right now, to be honest with you, though. It is in his defense. But with that said, Jess, scratch your surface thoughts on that thought, and then who you got?
Anthony Smith, to me, has become like the Houston Texans were a couple years ago. He's our lovable loser. We like the guy.
That's so mean.
We like the guy.
He's great on television. He's got a good skill set. Complimentary things to say.
He knows the game, right? He knows mixed martial arts. He talks about it. He looks good in a suit. You know what I mean? But like, he has never reached the pinnacle. He came close. He came close to like jumping that hurdle a few years back, but then, you know, a couple knockouts and such and some losses and real set him back. And now he's fighting guys that, again, like we were talking about earlier with Paul Craig, Anthony Smith's being fed to a guy who's meant to kick his ass. And I think Petrino will kick his ass. I don't think it's going to be much of a fight. Smith has lost a step or two or three possibly when it comes to speed. And although he is still scary on the feet, he's shown that he's not the scariest guy on the feet because he's fought other guys who have absolutely destroyed him on the feet. Anthony Smith did say something on Twitter about, well, hey, man, if Alex Pereira really wants a test, I'll show him and push him to the limits and see.
I'm telling you.
And I laughed my ass off. Again, I love our loser, Anthony Smith. I do. He is the most lovable loser in MMA right now. But there's no way he gets past a minute with Alex Pereira. Pereira eats him.
Golly.
Pereira eats him alive. I'm telling you, head kick, knockout, some knees. He makes it making me a minute 30 into the first round. Pereira just mauls him.
I'm so glad that you got a drastic MMA Twitter style take in there.
I'm saying just,
Smith wouldn't last 1 minute is
great. Minute 30.
Over under 2 minutes, and you're taking the under.
I'm taking the under.
I mean, he knocked down Hill in 2.5. And yeah. I mean, yeah, I like, man, I want Anthony to win because he's our lovable loser.
I know.
It's unfair that I'm going to pick against him, but I'm picking Vito Petrino.
And what do you think? How do you think it ends?
You know, I think he's going to end up knocking Smith out in the third round. I think he's going to grab. I think a TKO. I think Anthony has issues with guys that can grapple really well and guys that like to get on the mat. I know that Vitor is kind of more of a knockout guy and he's got heavy hands. But you know these Brazilian guys. About to sound prejudiced. Here we go. You know these Brazilian guys, when it comes to the mat work, they're usually a lot better than Americans. I like grapple fuck rounds. At some point in round two, wear Smith down, knockout round three. Jonathan Martinez, he's ranked 13th. He's taking on Jose Aldo. No ranking. Can I tell you why this upsets me, Jess?
Tell me, please.
Because I think one of the most emotional moments in combat sports in the last 10 years is Jose Aldo's retirement. When he's in the back and they start playing his music for him to come out and retire, and he's fighting his damnedest to not ball his eyes out, but he's bawling his fucking eyes out.
Yeah.
Just talking about it right now, Jess, I'm going to do the rock slap my forearm thing to get my chills down because it gives me the chills to just even think about it and say it out loud. And then when you do the Mick Foley thing and you come back and I don't like it. It upsets me. But we know combat sports. We know how it works. It's a mother. I get it. Jess, with that said, who you got?
For my boy Scarface.
We're getting emotional at the
because
end of the show.
Jonathan Martinez is an up-and-comer, and he's shown flashes of some really solid stuff, right? Like, I don't want to say that he's great at one thing. He's got some stuff that he does really well. But here's the thing that he's got on his side: speed and youth. And in mixed martial arts and most any other sport, when you're young and fast, you usually got a leg up on most other guys. Jose Aldo is going to be a step slower because we've seen that already. Like his last two or three fights, very slow. And can he still throw those nasty leg kicks? Yes. Will Martinez catch a couple? Yes. Will he switch up and go for takedowns? Yes. And then that's where Aldo's going to get fucked. I feel it's going to be a ground and pound TKO. Well, we're going to see him mashed up against the cage. Martinez just throwing bombs. And then the ref stopping the fight. I'm gonna say that it goes at least one round because I think Aldo's got enough energy to last at least the one round. But I bet you he's bleeding by the end of the first round, and then the second round is when he gets taken out.
This makes me sad.
It does make me sad.
I am crying.
I had to watch Fedor lose some really shitty fights, and I basically cried for those two. So
get in there and make it about yourself and Fedor, Jesse. God damn it. Martinez's last three fights, he knocked out Cub Swanson, decision to Nurmagomedov, which is never easy, and he knocked out Yanez in a barn burner. This reeks of a terrible fight for Aldo. Yeah. And I'm going to say Aldo lasts all three rounds. I'm going to go 2-1 Martinez. Aldo will give us one round where we get excited. We think he still got it. It'll either be the first or the second. I'm hoping Aldo does try and use some type of grappling, but seeing that Martinez survived a grapple, a guy like a Nurmagomedov, that makes me worry for Aldo. I can see where Jess goes knockout here. I can see Aldo getting knocked out, but because I'm so emotional, I'm going to hope for the best and I'm going to go Aldo.
We're all hoping for the best.
Aldo loses 2-1. Jess, let's get to the main event. And boy, oh boy, what a way to start the 2024 pay-per-view cycle. You had two great pay-per-view cards. This main event, it just stinks. I have no interest in it. There's so many guys in this division I want to see Pantoja fight, and this is not one of them. With that said, Jess, Pantoja, Urseg, however we're saying that, who you got?
How did this guy get into this fight? Have all the flyweights fought in the last, like, 3 months, and, like, none of them can fight? So this kid just gets this fight, like, out of, lack
that
of
makes
competition.
The most sense to me.
Good Lord. I absolutely love the flyweight division too. I'm a huge fan of the flyweight and the featherweight division. Huge divisions. I love their champions. I love the competition that's underneath the champions. I think both those divisions in the UFC are the most competitive in the UFC right now. I think Alexandre Pantoja mauls Urseg. I don't know who Urseg's fought. But having a 12-1 record versus a guy who, has been a champion, like, the skill set is different. Pantoja is championship ready. He's fought championship fights. He's fought championship competition. Like, Urseg is an up-and-coming guy. Like, he's trying to make a name for himself, I'm sure, and the record shows that he's done well. But, hot damn, what a way to end an absolutely mid-field card.
Maybe one of our MMA people can fill us in, because Urseg's last fight was a month ago. No, it was March 2nd. So maybe he is a quick turnaround fill-in. But he does have three consecutive wins here, what I'm looking at. I'm not interested in this fight, Jess. But he does have those.
His last wins.
Look at it, though. His last one was like
David Dovrak.
I know who Dovrak is. He's not bad.
Alejandro Costa at 295 of the division.
That one I don't know.
And he beat up Matt Schnell. I remember Schnell, and I also remember him not being very good.
Yeah, I do remember him knocking out
Schnell. So what I think is that Mr. is going to get fucked up.
Can one of our MMA people please tell us who this fight was supposed to be so we could get excited for it the next time we talk about Pantoja? Pantoja submission round 3. That's my take. I don't think Urseg makes it out of 3 rounds.
No, I don't think Urseg does not.
In Brazil, too? Like, good luck, dude.
Goodness gracious, man. I'm telling you. You know what's funny is the Brazil cards used to be really good. I remember some of these Brazil cards we've had in the past, 5 to 7 years have been really stacked.
Great. No, they're great. And the crowd's hotter than a pistol, too. So,
but
the
problem is, I think that most of the Brazilians that we used to watch are all retiring.
Oh, that's a great point. That's a very
good Glover point. Retired. Shogun's retired.
You're right. We need more Brazilians to become superstars. Our only superstar is our boy Pereira. He's our guy.
He's the guy.
We're hitting the wrap it up. Yeah. Button. This show was girthy. This was a meaty show.
So thanks for listening. Spotify listeners, Apple listeners, thank you very much. We obviously appreciate everyone listening. If you listen via this podcast streaming, we appreciate that as well. I want to say shout out to Variety Sports Network, who puts us on, and they do a good job of helping with the retweets and the send outs and the shout outs. So nothing really to complain about there. Love you guys. You can follow them at @Variety_Sports_. We already did a bunch of shout outs at the beginning, so I'm going to keep it sweet and simple. If you want to listen to the show, again, Spotify or Apple is the easiest way to find it. Just go to that other sports show. If you want to, you can follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it at @TeamToss21. You can also go and follow Jason and I, Jay at Valdez spelled backwards 559, and myself at JTT_81. Follow us, communicate with us, tell us what you think about us if you want to, or just talk sports with us, because we'll do that all day long. Folks, have a great week, because it's the beginning of the week, so make it a good one.
Peace out.